So, folks, Lani is what you call a sophrologist, practices sophrology, and as always, Lani, can we explain what that word means?
Yeah, sophrology is actually a balanced state of being. So it's the conscious harmony of your whole person. So mind, body, spirit, breath, consciousness, and just how to balance all of that and create a state of presence where you can consciously respond to life rather than anxiously reacting to it. Using a lot of body biology, I guess we call it the biological values. So understanding the body, grounding in the body. When you know what your body's doing, then you can make better choices as to what you do to your body so that your body can function at optimal levels.
Is it? I guess it's a pretty easy thing to say about our culture that we have a tendency to ignore what our body's telling us and do what we think we're supposed to be doing and force ourselves to keep on keeping on and that sort of thing. So I guess sophrology is probably quite a response to our culture in some ways.
Yeah, well, I mean, we just go about life without really paying attention to the body and what the body needs or how the body will respond. I mean, I can give you a prime example of my activities on Saturday, which caused me to have a migraine all day yesterday.
Oh, so you weren't practicing what you preach?
I was not. And I, totally spaced it. I was having fun with the grandkids. We were decorating Valentine cookies, you know, those heart-shaped sugar cookies with icing and putting all kinds of stuff on top of them and then eating them. And it's a kind of a weakness of mine and happens once a year. And I totally just forgot that I have a reaction to sugar. Since having COVID, my appetites and my metabolism has completely changed. So if I eat too much sugar, then I get really terrible migraines.
Oh, wow.
And I totally forgot about that. I was just having fun with the grandkids and not being present and not recognizing what I was doing to my body.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing about this situation is if you forget, your body will remind you.
Yes. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, I'm glad that you're well enough now to have a chat with us. And understand, we want to talk about sleep today. And I thought, there's lots to talk about there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. So, I mean, we can start with the basics just so that we understand what is happening in sleep. So there's five stages of sleep and they don't progress in sequence throughout the night. They're mostly all over the place, other than the fact that slow wave sleep or deep sleep happens the first half of the night and your REM sleep, your more awake and dreaming sleep happens the last half of the night.
Yep.
So in the first stage, this is when you're just kind of floating and you might fall asleep for a few minutes and then you wake up and you think, oh, was I asleep or was I not asleep? And that's kind of the first state. Well, it's a first stage of sleep and it can happen right as you're going to sleep in the night or if you wake up in the middle of the night and you do this floating stage occasionally throughout the night.
Okay.
But then the second stage of sleep is, this is 50% of your sleep, and this is called spindle sleep. The reason it's called spindle sleep is because when they're doing tests on people in their sleep, like people who have sleep apnea, they'll hook them up to the EEGs, the wires, and they'll test them. And spindle sleep creates lots of spindles on the papers or the monitors when they're monitoring this. And so they call it spindle sleep. This is your learning stage of sleep when the brain filters everything you've done throughout the day and determines what's most important, what's not so important, and it filters it so that it can file things back so that you're prepared for new learning on the following day.
Okay.
So then there's the deep sleep or slow wave sleep, delta wave sleep, whatever people like to call it. This is the most important stage of sleep for your immune system. Tissue repair happens, your metabolism, the growth, human growth hormone is actually released during this stage of sleep. And it's really, really essential to the health and well-being of the body. And then in the last stage of sleep. This is when your heart rate starts to, or stage five, not last stage, but stage five sleep is when your heart rate increases, you have dreams, and your memory is affected. This is a really important stage to balance your emotional well-being. So that's a really quick explanation of, there's so much more to it.
Yeah, but. so my immediate question to that is, like, this sounds like a, like, there's a lot to get done while you're asleep. And
absolutely.
When like last night, for instance, I woke up at, I don't know, 3 a.m, and it took me ages to get back to sleep. I'm sort of feeling a bit more tired than normal at the moment, although it is Monday morning. Have I missed out on some of those stages, do you reckon?
Yes. Yep. You would have missed out on not just the stages, but what's going on in those stages. So there'll be some release and secretion of certain hormones that are happening. Some balancing of your emotions, you know, whatever's going on with your learning capabilities and that filtration process. Yeah, that's all happening. So I would say probably what you're missing out on by the time you get, and a lot of people do wake up between 3 and 3:30. That's usually because you're coming out of your deep sleep and going into your the remembering or the REM sleep. So because the REM sleep happens the last half of the night. Mm. So that would be your emotional well-being and your body just being able to, I mean, we hold our emotions in our body. So being able to release those emotions and prepare and be open to receive new emotions for the following day. So that could be, you know, a part of the reason why you're feeling a little bit lethargic or more sluggish this morning.
Should I hide from everybody today? Sounds like I could be a little cranky.
That could be a possibility. Just, yeah, I mean, now, you know, now that you're aware of it, you can notice, oh, okay, this is happening because I didn't get enough sleep last night. So now I get it.
Fair enough. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, where do we start? What if you're giving a talk to someone, say, which you basically are now, where do you go from here? What do you want to tell them most about sleep at this stage?
So the most important thing we want to talk about is sleep is creating regular sleep time. So having a bedtime routine. So your body basically really enjoys a proper routine. So going to bed at a certain time, waking up at a certain time, and also the exposure to light. So when you wake up, let's say the optimal best sleep time would be 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. So if you're waking up at 6 a.m., turning on some lights, going outside as soon as the sun comes up, spending some time in the light, because what you're doing actually is setting up the body to be awake now for the next 16 hours. So now that the body has been exposed to light, your melatonin will start to regenerate and takes about 16 hours. And after about 16 hours, your melatonin will say, okay, now it's time to go to sleep. You'll have enough melatonin in your body to say, we're going to sleep now. So establishing routine is really, really important. Having that regular bedtime at night. And so that can be anywhere from 9 to 11, let's say.
Yep.
And the reason that it's really important to go to bed at that time is because the human growth hormone is released during the first 90 minutes of sleep. And it's not released. It's released at the greatest capacity in that time of day of your sleep. Yeah. It releases a little bit throughout the day, but if you want the most benefit from your human growth hormone, that would be in the first 90 minutes of sleep. So this hormone enhances growth in children. It's important for tissue repair in adults, and it also helps to balance your metabolism. So it's really important for your thyroid. So anybody who might be having issues with thyroid, they might want to see what their sleep routines are.
So I've heard people say that as people get older, they need less sleep or they have less sleep. I don't know which way is
they do it? Have less sleep. It's just because of the fluctuations in hormones. So as we age, our cells aren't producing at optimal levels. Our hormones are changing, so it's just different. And so by recognizing that, we can do things to enhance sleep and still make sleep helpful to us. So having that regular bedtime routine, doing some relaxation in the evening. So that could be some meditation or reading a calm and relaxing book, creating some more subdued lighting, noticing what the room temperature of the room is, maybe doing a little bit of really low key exercise, even your food and beverage intake. And so as far as food and beverage intake, it's really important to do this to at least 2 hours previous to going to bed. So I mentioned the human growth hormone. There's two things that have to happen for your human growth hormone to properly release. And that is, getting to sleep at the right time of night, and then also just making sure that your glucose and insulin levels are low. So that means not eating 2 hours before bed. Yep. So not wanting, yeah, because you want your digestive system to be, I mean, for people who need to have food and they're hungry, I would say maybe some, a tea like a chamomile or a lavender tea. And also there's other foods, like there's bananas are actually a good thing to eat in the evening because they have tryptophan in them, which helps for sleeping.
Okay.
So it's just about creating those restful sleep strategies. Even your daytime routine, recognizing what your mood levels are. A lot of when you talk about adults, their mood levels, what are their mood levels? That's a hard one to deal with, because you've got people that are worried or stressed or anxious about life, whatever's going on in life, or people might be suffering from grief or depression or, some other emotional struggles that are going on with them. So it's really important to check your mood before you're falling asleep and come into a state of peace. And again, that might be through meditation or some of the things that you might say to yourself. People who struggle with sleep, they might even say, like, oh, I'm really anxious. Like, they're telling themselves these things, like, I don't fall asleep very good, so I'm not going to go to bed.
It's not a long-term strategy, is it?
No, absolutely not. They have anxiety over sleeping, and so they just choose not to sleep because they'll get in bed and they'll lay there and they'll be anxious about the fact that they can't sleep. So rather than being anxious, you might say things like, I'm tired, I feel my body on the bed, I'm grateful for sleep. You can imagine, you create a cognitive process. So creating thoughts that are creating restful sleep habits rather than anxious habits.
You also mentioned... go ahead.
No, go on.
I was going to say, you mentioned temperature earlier. Do we expect... Is it kind of a signal to the body when things are cooling down as well?
Yeah, so... So I'll just ask you a question in return. What's better for you when you sleep? Do you sleep better with cold temperatures or warm temperatures?
Oh, it has to be cold, but I'm in a particular special case. The thing I'm thinking of is all our modern, really insulated homes. Some of them stay really hot through the night, and you have to throw the windows open and let the mosquitoes in. It's a complicated business.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so your body actually sleeps better with lower temperatures. In fact, if you're able to wake up without an alarm, your body actually will wake you up because the temperature starts to rise at a certain level. So if you have a normal sleep routine, you want to sleep between 10 and 6, then your body temperatures will start to rise between 5:30 and 6, and then your body starts to wake up because your body temperature rises.
Oh, okay.
So that's, so your body sleeps much better when it's cooler. And yeah, it's difficult in the summer when your house is too hot or your bed is too hot or whatever. And that's just a reaction of the body.
Right.
It's not, I mean, it's a preference, obviously, because we do sleep better with cold, but we sleep better with cold because biologically your body prefers being cooler when you're sleeping rather than being too hot.
Mm. So as a sophrologist, are you helping people with sleep, or is it more like people are talking about other things and you're saying sleep is an important part of dealing with this?
Yeah, no. So as a sophrologist, I do work with people in their sleep. And the way that we do that is through meditation. So I actually create meditations that address people's sleep habits.
Right.
I do have sleep meditations. We use body scan. So you can be, if you take your thoughts and you focus them on the body, it's much easier for you to be able to sleep. So there's body scan and there's also breath work. So lying in bed at night, placing your hands on your belly and doing some belly breathing will help you to fall asleep at night. So that's just a deep inhale through the breath and or through the nose and then exhaling and identifying how your belly, so you're focused on the movement of the body and how your belly, as you inhale, it inflates, and as you exhale, it deflates. And just noticing that when you're noticing what's going on with the body, with your breathing. So that's one of the things that we do. We also do a progressive muscle relaxation with the body scan.
Yeah.
So that's noticing the different body parts. You can start at the head or you can start at the toes and just you know, tightening up your toes and your feet and all the muscles there, and then releasing and relaxing your toes, and then going up to your ankles and your calves and your shins and your knees, and just, you know, slowly moving up through the body. And you just do a tighten of the muscles and then a release. And it's called progressive muscle relaxation. And it's just calming of the muscles in the body. And this has an effect on what is called the autonomic nervous system.
Yep.
So that would be your parasympathetic and your sympathetic nervous systems. So again, the biology of the body. And this is why with sophrology, we're grounded in the biology of the body. And when we understand what's happening with the body, we're more easily to address and respond to the needs of the body so that we can have optimal health and well-being.
So let's talk about sleeping pills then.
Hmm.
My very basic understanding is some of them, maybe all of them, I don't know, interfere with the normal sleep and the kind of the good stuff that's, you know, the repair of the body and the mind and all that you discussed earlier. Where are you at with sleeping pills, Lani?
So any kind of what it's called pharmacology or medicine, anything that you take that's a synthetic pill that's not natural, well, and even there's melatonin. You can take melatonin and magnesium, which will help to enhance sleep. But taking synthetic drugs prescribed by a doctor it's not natural to the body. So what happens is you take those pills, and then the body recognizes that the levels of whatever, your melatonin or what have you in the body, are at sleep levels. And so now the body doesn't actually have to naturally produce these things. And so you become addicted to these pills and medicines that you're taking. They also have an effect on the production of hormones in the body, like antidepressants will have an effect on the hormones in the body. Most synthetic pills will have an effect on how the body produces hormones and how the nervous system responds to the hormones. And so that causes, it's actually more harmful to take pills to enhance sleep than it is helpful.
Presumably, there's a, like, you, like, I know I've seen them prescribed for people who've, like, if their spouse has just died or something like that, that kind of situation, like for a very short time, they might be useful, and you might not, your body might not have finished, it might not have time to adjust to them. I don't know. I'm taking a stab in the dark here. Is that a reasonable assumption? It takes a few days or a few weeks?
No, absolutely. So there is definitely a place for pharmacology in the body, and that is when you've reached a level of you just aren't capable of creating balance in the body naturally.
Yeah.
And so that would be high levels of grief, high levels of anxiety. There's definitely times where there's high levels of something. I mean, even, you know, for me as a sophrologist, there's I'll reach a level of something. Like yesterday I had this terrible migraine and I couldn't get, I try all the natural things first. I always do that.
Yep.
And when they don't work, I end up taking a Panadol or ibuprofens or something to help to alleviate it, because the body does need help when in extreme cases. So there's absolutely a place for it, but do recognize that what's important is that you recognize when you don't need them anymore and that you don't need to create a dependence on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as with anything, it's really important. Even if you're, you know, listening to this podcast right now and you're thinking, okay, maybe I need to adjust the pharmaceuticals that I'm taking. It's really important to work with your doctor on those things. Don't ever just stop anything that you're doing, that you've been doing for a long time, because your body has become accustomed to this pill that you're taking. And if it may be necessary to continue to take this pill. There is a pill that I take every day for one of my health issues that I can't not take it. I have to take it.
Yeah.
And so it's just really important. And again, it goes back to what we teach in sophrology is the biological values, identifying with your body, being aware of what's going on with your body, noticing what's happening, having a relationship with the systems of the body so that you can work together rather than against it.
So are there natural things that we can take that won't adjust, you know, permanently addict us or at least make us dependent?
Yeah, I would suggest magnesium. Melatonin's good, but I don't think melatonin's available in New Zealand over the counter.
How much melatonin do we need in this bright sunny country?
Depends on what people are dealing with. It can be 5 to 10 milligrams per night. I mean, I don't know what the level, everybody's body is different, so your body's going to be producing melatonin differently.
I guess my question relates to is the amount of sunshine we get proportional to the amount of melatonin we produce, and is a bright sunny day going to produce more?
Yeah, it will. And because there's also different levels of light, there is still the ultraviolet light coming through the clouds, not as much.
Yeah.
But again, this comes back to having that proper morning routine, which will tell the body to start producing melatonin so that 16 hours later, there's enough melatonin in the body for you to fall asleep peacefully at night. So that morning routine, there's a lot that goes into that as far as establishing light in the body and how quickly you should drink your first cup of coffee in the morning. You know, the morning routine has just as much effect on your sleep as your night routine.
Right. Okay. So back to the question about help getting to sleep. Sometimes you hear people say, you hear a discussion, it'll be like, oh, I've got some sleeping pills, and someone will say, oh, those things are terrible. And they're like, no, it's all right. It's a natural sleeping pill. If we just slap a label, it's a natural sleeping pill on it, is that enough, or do we need to be a little bit more judicious about our choices?
I would still just be aware of it.
I guess what I'm asking is it possible that there's some things out there that are labeled as natural, but they're still things that our system's going to get dependent on?
Yep, we can still become dependent on those now. So that would be like magnesium for sleep.
Okay.
You can get that readily over the counter. And really, it's just about observing what's going on with the body. And this is why we teach this in sophrology. Just notice what's happening with your body. And, take it for a period of time, but if you feel like, you'd like to not be taking this, even this natural substance, try some other things. Try some meditation. Try adjusting the lights at night. Try not having your screens and your devices within reach. Some people really struggle with light. Any type of light in the room, they need complete darkness. So, looking at how much light is coming off of the digital clock on the nightstand next to you, or, any other little lights that might be like on, even when your computer's turned off, there'll be a light, tiny little light that might be creating light. So when you can just observe what's happening in the space around you and making some adjustments to the space around you, making some adjustments to your behaviors, and doing some things differently rather than just becoming reliant on a pill that you're taking or some other kind of natural thing that you're using, because even these things can cause the body to become reliant on it. And then our brains are lazy. if we're supplying something to the brain, then the brain's like, oh, good, there's something else coming into my body, so I don't need to produce this hormone or this chemical in order to enhance sleep. So the brain becomes, that's what addiction's all about. The brain becomes addicted to whatever routine we're doing, which then creates the dependence and no need for the body to produce melatonin. So the melatonin just doesn't get produced properly. So
right.
It's just awareness of your activities.
And presumably, again, like you say, don't chuck out the sleeping pills tonight. Talk to your doctor, but also I presume you would want to wean yourself off slowly.
Under a doctor's observation. And also it helps also to journal your activities. When you can say that today, this is my bedtime routine today, or this was my morning routine today, this is what I did to help enhance my sleep tonight. and writing those things down so that you can go back and review it. Okay, this is what I did, and I actually had a good sleep. So that you can continue to repeat it. So it's when you journal it, then you know what you're doing to help to enhance the sleep. And that includes when you're weaning yourself off of a drug that you don't want to take, or some other form of activity that you're using to enhance sleep that you don't want to do anymore. It's just called habit tracking, tracking your habits and things that you're doing and disassociating from them.
Mm-hmm. So you keep talking about getting up at 6 o'clock. I don't really like the sound of that. I have to be honest. I don't get up at six. I know lots of people do. I don't like getting up when it's dark. I find I feel like that just feels wrong to me. And I'm in a luxurious position where I can get up. I get up and I quickly get ready and come down to work, and so I don't have to get up. I pretty much get up when the sun gets up. Even in the worst of winter. So I feel like I'm kind of privileged to be able to do that, but. Is it just me because I'm not a good early riser, or is it a thing that getting up in the dark doesn't work that well for us?
Getting up in the dark doesn't necessarily work that great. It is better to it's nice to sleep with the light of day, but it's also just recognizing what your body's doing too. I mean, it's your body will wake up when your body is ready to wake up, when it's had the amount of sleep that it needs to have. So if you're a person who needs, 8 to 9 hours of sleep, then allow your body to have that sleep. If your life is set up for that kind of luxury, there's a lot of people that have to wake up with the alarm. And there's also a lot of people that just have to wake up because their children wake up. Children automatically wake up.
Yes. I remember that. My kids are older now, but yeah, that was another way of making parents feel tired in the early days.
Yeah.
So how many people are not getting enough sleep, do you reckon?
Most everyone.
Most everyone. Okay, all right.
Yeah. If you're not aware of the necessities of sleep and how to adjust your day so that you can sleep, if you're not intentionally living so that you can have restful sleep, then you're probably not having restful sleep. You're not going to bed at night. I mean, there's plenty of people who say that they're night owls. And so they've created in their mind this process of, I'm a night owl, I don't sleep until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
That's actually not true. that's something they've been telling themselves.
Yeah.
The circadian rhythms and the melatonin in the body actually do want to go to sleep. But because you've established that those strategic thoughts in your mind that have said that you've told yourself and you've told your brain, we don't sleep until 1 o'clock. Well, your brain's going to accommodate you because your brain has determined that's what's important because that's what your thoughts are saying. So
can you kind of fool your body by just having the lights on? Does that?
Yeah. Keeping the lights on, keeping on to the, you know, if you're doing some gaming, and it's high energy and high level, you're keeping the systems of your body excited and the adrenaline rush is going on. Even if you're reading a book or watching a show or, yeah, if you've got the monitors on and you're staring at the monitors, you're tricking your body into staying awake. And it's actually really, really bad. It's like, you know, sleep deprivation to the body creates high levels of anxiety. You have an increase of heart rate, your weight, you can gain weight, diabetes. I mean, your impaired cognition. There's so much going on with sleep deprivation. Like we said at the beginning, when I went through the five stages, how essential sleep is to the body and how, you know, there's so much going on. We think that we're just lying there and that it might be a lazy thing to do. And, oh, I should only really have 3 or 4 hours of sleep at night. I've got to get up and do these are for, you know, high producing people who are thinking that sleep is not important. It's so important. There's so much that the body is doing while we're sleeping that it really is to our benefit to get at least 8 hours of sleep every night.
I'm quite alarmed by our politicians. Well, there's many things about politicians that alarm people, but sticking with sleep, they traditionally, especially the more responsibility they have, they just seem to survive on 4 hours sleep for like years. And some people cope better than others.
They're surviving, but it's really bad on the health. I mean, if you look at photographs of politicians
yes.
before they took office and then 8 years later,
they age.
You know, or 3 years or 6 years later, and you look at their photo then, the hair loss and the wrinkles on the face and the exhaustion, you can just see from the look of their images what this toll has taken on them. And this is a lot will have to do with sleep deprivation.
I also, I'd probably be concerned about the quality of decisions made mm-hmm. when they're sleep deprived.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because they'll have high levels of anxiety. They're not making their cognition is impaired. They're not able to make proper choices. This is why a lot of times we vote someone into office and we really like their first term, right? They're doing a great job in their first term. And then their second term, we're like, who are you? Why did we even vote you in the first place? Mm. And it decreases after a certain period of time. And they just, they can't be in office anymore because of the health risk and what's happened to their bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to my lack of sleep tonight, last night. If I have some catch up during the day, if I go and have a nana nap, is that, I know that can kind of make me feel a bit more ready to go, but I guess you're going to tell me it's still not replacing the work that's been done in my brain while I should have been sleeping in the middle of the night.
No, actually those power naps are really great during the day, like a 30-minute power nap.
Yeah.
Essential to the body. If you are feeling tired and your body's saying, I'm tired, I need a nap, go lie down, take a 30-minute nap, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. You will find if your body is healthy, you will find that after 15 to 30 minutes, your body just automatically wakes up and then you're good to go.
Right.
unless you are a teenager, and in which case teenagers need that amount of sleep, or if you know, children, they need the sleep. This is, I mean, their growth hormone is continually secreting and releasing into the body, and it's essential for them to have the amount of sleep that they need. They're not, sleep for them is not unhealthy. So if a child is sleeping during the day for extended periods of time, let them sleep.
Yeah. And they,
but for adults, really, it's just a good 15 to 30, at the most, I'd say 30 minutes. That's your good power nap.
Yeah.
And then you should be able to get up and keep going with your day.
For our teenagers, like they need extra sleep?
They do, yeah. Because it's the growth process and what's going on with their bodies, their hormones. I mean, you've had teenagers, you know, that when they reach puberty and their hormones are just flaring, so the body needs to be able to balance these hormones. The body is secreting and releasing hormones during sleep that are essential and helpful to the body, especially the growth hormone. There's so much going on with the growth hormone that we aren't aware of how essential. There's 50 hormones that engage with each other and interchange in our bodies. And our levels of hormones in our body are so essential to our health and well-being.
So I'm just wondering about teenagers, like watching them, you know, they're expected to work really hard at their studies, especially in the final 3 years of school, and get up early as well. And, you know, it feels like it's a bit of a contradiction. I don't know. That's just a feeling I have. I don't know what you have to say about it.
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely a contradiction. I mean, even for not just teenagers, but also for people who are in their tertiary studies, like doctors, for example, and the amount of time they have to work. But
yeah, that is crazy.
It is. It's really crazy and not helpful to the body. But the body is very resourceful. So if there are, I mean, I knew people who didn't sleep much during the week because of their work or school schedules. And then on the weekends, like Sunday, they would just sleep all day Sunday. And this is the body recovering. So again, this is establishing a sleep routine for your body, recognizing, and your body will identify with what you're doing and it'll recover. So if there are times where you're not going to sleep between 9 and 11 at night, and you are staying out till 1 in the morning, and you're getting up later in the day, the occasional time that this happens is fine, but not long term. I would say, you know, long term, it's detrimental to your body, but occasionally, as it needs to happen, it's okay because the body can recover. But so for those teenagers and people in school, I would say, yeah, if you have to do those things during the week, recognize that you're doing them. Don't take high anxiety drugs to keep you awake. And then on the weekend, just, make up for it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they're not doing, because the weekend is their party time. So,
yeah, well, the need to cut loose is also there as well. Lani, folks, we're talking to Lani, who is a sophrologist, and we're talking about sleep. And it's been kind of weird because my sleep got disrupted last night, and this whole conversation is just making me feel like I really notice how tired I am, which I probably would have been able to kind of put out of, kind of forget about for a little while during my show, but it's really conscious. I feel like I would just like to go and have a nap now.
When you become aware of it, that's when you notice, this is what I need to do.
So I'm gonna send you away, Lani, and go and have a rest somewhere, I think.
Great idea.
Yeah, but hey, look, really good to talk to you. It's our first chat this year. Nice to chat with you as always. And can people get in touch? Where do you send them if they want to learn more about sleep or about sophrology?
They can. So if they're having sleep issues that they really want to discuss with me, just flick me an email, sophro, which is spelled SOPHRO, sophrosolis@gmail.com. Otherwise, I mean, I don't have a lot on my social media in regards to sleep. But yeah, they can check out my social media pages, which is at Sophrosolus.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, Lani.
But yeah, get in touch. I have a full course on sleep and how to change your sleep habits.
It could be useful for some. Yeah. All right, Lani, thanks heaps for your time this morning.